Welcome to the Musings on Sports podcast for Tuesday, August 8th, 2022. I'm Kelly Elbin, along with my co-host Bob Bubka. And Bob, there's a lot we can talk about in the world of sports, but Musings on Sports has always been about great storytelling, and boy, did we ever lose a legend in storytelling last week when the great Vin Scully passed away at the age of 94. And I will tell you, many people, myself included, regard him as the greatest sportscaster ever. Certainly baseball was what everyone knew him for, but football, he was terrific. Golf with Lee Trevino on NBC Sports for years. And yeah, he lived a long life, but for whatever reason, Bob, and I think it's because he was such a part of the family of listeners, hearing the news of his death was, at least for me, was really quite a jolt.
Well, it really was. It was almost like losing a member of the family. Don't forget, Vince, the voice of the L.A. Dodgers for 67 years. I mean, yeah. I even have difficulty saying 67 years. I mean, that indicates two things, obviously, his longevity, but his talent to be the best there is. I mean, had somebody come along during that span that was any better, Vince would have been replaced. But not only did not anybody come along that could replace him, nobody ever came along that could even come close to matching him.
And the fans in Los Angeles have been so lucky for so long. Chick Hearn, long time beloved voice of the Los Angeles Lakers. And it's a Laker town, and it's a Dodger town. And to have those two voices for such an extended period, they were very much family and very much beloved. You know, it's interesting for me, the Washington Senators moved from the D.C. area where I grew up in 1971 and became the Texas Rangers. And I, for a lot of years, I didn't have baseball in my life night to night. But my good friend Johnny Holiday, who was our second guest on Musings on Sports, Bob, one of the joys of my life has been able to become a good friend with Johnny, because Johnny has been the voice of the University of Maryland football team and the Maryland men's basketball team for just under 45 years. He's the voice that we hear from September through, well, depends on how far the basketball team goes, possibly into April. And, you look forward to that voice. You know that voice. And we've had, I mean, gosh, look at some of the incredible voices we've had just in the few months that we've been doing Musings on Sports. We've had Jim Nance and Dan Hicks and Jimmy Roberts of NBC Sports. We've had the great broadcasting pioneer Leslie Visser. And I mentioned Johnny. I'm interested for you, having been doing radio and having been doing, had that headset on for so long, what are the attributes in your way of thinking of a great announcer, whether it's on TV, on the radio, and did you pattern your style at all after a particular announcer when you first got into the announcing ranks?
Well, you know, it's, ironically enough, when I got into golf, which has become my career, nobody did radio golf. I mean, so I didn't have anybody that I could listen to and say, hey, I'd like to do a little bit like that or a little bit like this. It was strictly on my own, and I just created my own style. And one thing that I was a big advocate of, and I talked to so many guys that would join me as the years went on to be part of our broadcast team, the hardest thing that I could convey was the message that, you know, less was really more. And when we get to hear Mark Rolfing in one of our future shows, he's going to cite that as an example of his method of doing it. And that's what Vince Scully did so well. I mean, he could stop talking, and that would be the most impactful part of his call. It wasn't necessarily what he was saying, but his ability to pause, let the crowd tell the story, and then come back and put an put a bow on the description. So I've always been a fond believer. You know, the less you say, the better off it sounds.
Great point. And in a number of the stories that have come out since Mr. Scully's passing, it was noted about just what you've said, the famous Kirk Gibson home run off Dennis Eckersley in the World Series. When the ball landed in the right field bleachers, Mr. Scully went quiet as Gibby rounded the bases and pumped that fist, I think just after he hit second base. I think it was about a minute and 5 seconds of just nothing from Scully other than allowing the viewer to soak in what was one of the greatest moments, frankly, in the history of baseball.
Well, the behind-the-scenes story, Vince Scully had a lot of practice of not saying anything. And this is a story that I was told, and I haven't heard it mentioned in all the thousands of Vince Scully stories that went around. We were doing Tigers Tournament out at Sherwood Oaks in California, and Wayne Gretzky had a house there, and a lot of celebrities had a house there, including, I found out, a gentleman by the name of Vince Scully. I was standing down on the first tee, and the guy showing me around said, "Look at that house up there, Bob, to your left." I said, "Wow, that's a nice house." He said, "Yeah, Vince Scully lives there." I said, "Well, that's certainly understandable with what he's attained in the world of broadcasting." And then the guy said, "Look at the house next to it." I said, "Well, it's a little bit bigger. It's a little bit nicer." I said, "Who lives there?" And he said, what was her name now? Jameson was her last name. Jenna Jameson, the number one porn star in L.A. So Vince had a lot of practice being silent because every time he came home from work, as he turned in his driveway, he had to see that bigger, nicer house right next to his that was owned by a porn star.
Right. It just depends on what we value and what can be, you know, worth the dollar. I would never say that I've heard of Jenna Jameson. Perhaps I've heard of her, but never ever saw anything that she did. Hey, before we continue our conversation, I want to encourage all of our listeners to stay tuned to hear the interview that Bob and I conducted with John Simpson, who's going to be our special guest today. You may not know the name, but John founded the Simpson Cup. It's an annual Ryder Cup-style event that's played between teams of 13 injured servicemen and women and veterans from Great Britain and the United States. It'll be the 10th Simpson Cup, in fact, will be played later this month at the Great Baltusrol Golf Club in New Jersey. You know, Bob, through that event and his and John's on-course foundation, I was really struck of how John is using golf, you know, Bob, really and literally in some cases to save lives, but get people mentally back doing something of value, of purpose to their life.
Yeah, I came away from that fully realizing that John Simpson was using a golf course to get wounded service players, wounded service veterans, should say, back on course. And he has done a great job. It's a great interview. I learned so much. I know our musings on sports listeners are going to just be thrilled at what they learn about John Simpson.
Yeah, I was really touched by him, by the mission and his background, having worked for International Management Group, IMG, over in Europe for a number of years and representing Nick Faldo and Nicky Price and Bernhard Langer, top players in the world at that time. And Bob, speaking of Faldo, I watched the end of the Wyndham Championship on CBS Sports on Sunday, and Sir Nick was a mess. And I understand it. It was a 16-year run as the sidekick, if you will, the analyst to Jim Nantz. I thought he was good. I didn't think he was the best, but I thought he was good. But he really teared up And you could tell that it was an emotional time for him. He was joined by Ian Baker Finch and Frank Nablo, and you could clearly tell a strong bond and friendship among those four. It sounds like ride off into the fly fishing sunset in Montana with his wife and a home that they're building. A bit of an end of an era and a really poignant moment for Faldo.
Yeah, it really was. And of course, when somebody is so great at what they do, 6-time major winner for Nick Faldo to climb into the TV booth and, you know, provide listeners with some bits of information that they would not normally know of. He certainly had the inside track on a lot of things. Players were, always anxious to talk to him, thinking mm-hmm. maybe they could get one of Faldo's secrets. 16 years in the booth, I agree with your assessment. He was not the best, but he certainly did a great job.
Okay, so in your opinion, whether it's someone who's been up in the booth or someone who's been an on-course reporter in televised golf, in your opinion, who's the best analyst that you've ever heard in the history of televised golf, and why? And taking that a step further, who's the best golf broadcaster in TV history? I guess maybe the lead broadcaster, if you will, in your mind.
Well, as far as the lead broadcaster, there's been so many that I'd be foolish if I could put a name to somebody that deserved to be labeled as the best. As far as the analyst, I got to go with Johnny Miller. A lot of people didn't like Johnny. A lot of the players didn't like Johnny. But to me, that was an indication that he was doing his job, because he was saying exactly what he felt. He was analyzing the player's reaction to maybe a decision on a shot, maybe a decision on a club. Johnny Miller, certainly I give him number one as far as being an analyst, and he certainly had the luxury of working alongside of Dan Hicks for many years, and Dan was a very good quarterback. He could dish it off to Johnny Miller to solicit the right comment, and more often than not, Johnny was right there.
Yeah, good word there, quarterback, facilitator, whatever you want to call it. Dan is, we had Dan on a few episodes ago, and that repertoire, that camaraderie between the two. And you could tell in what Dan told us that he and Johnny really had a terrific relationship. I would agree with you. Miller broke the mold in a game where players can be ultra sensitive to what you say about them, how you critique them, etc. But Johnny was pretty fearless that way, and you don't do it as long as he did it with NBC Sports unless you are willing to speak your mind and know what you're talking about. So thanks on that, Bob. I appreciate that insight. You know, we've talked to about a lot of great names over the past few minutes, and in just a moment, you'll hear the great story of John Simpson, the Simpson Cup, and the On Course Foundation, all of which will come up after we hear from our good friends at Titleist.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Welcome back to Musings on Sports. Our guest today is the founder of the Simpson Cup, an annual Ryder Cup-style golf tournament between teams of 13 injured servicemen and veterans from Great Britain and the United States. The 10th Simpson Cup will be held later this month, August 30th and 31st, at the famed Baltusrol Golf Club in Springfield, New Jersey. And to tell us all about how the Simpson Cup came to be and what it means to its participants, and the game of golf is John Simpson, a former senior vice president at International Management Group and the president and chairman of the On Course Foundation. John Simpson, it is a pleasure to talk to you, and welcome to Musings on Sports.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for having me on.
Well, we're so pleased to have John Simpson with us on Musings on Sports. John, from TPC Sawgrass through St. Andrews, you've had quite a lineup of courses that have hosted the Simpson Cup.
Yeah, we've had some amazing courses. And when we started the event, as you quite rightly said, in TPC Sawgrass, and we alternate between America and here, we wanted to get the very best courses for these guys and girls to compete on. So we've had some great names like Oak Hill, Congressional, Maidstone, The Creek, and every one of the courses in Britain is an open venue. So we've had Royal Lytham, Royal St. George's, Royal Birkdale, and of course, in 2019, Royal St. Andrews, the home of golf, which was very special.
All right, take us through the week coming up, though, at Ballers Royal, one of the great golf courses in America. Will you have team and individual matches, much like the Ryder Cup?
Yeah, a little bit different because we start off on Sunday, the 28th, and we have the opening ceremony and then the fundraising dinner in the evening. Then on the Monday, all the guys and girls from On Course in the Simpson Cup play in a fundraising event, basically, with the sponsors and guests. And then on Tuesday, we have the four-ball event, and followed by the singles on Wednesday. And we have two picks that I personally have. I give to two injured servicemen or women who probably have not got an 18 handicap, or definitely haven't, so haven't been able to reach the criteria, but would be either because that their disabilities have stopped them doing that. And last year we had a triple amputee, an American chap, who played. And I'm delighted to tell you that he actually qualified this year and is now off 15 handicap. So no pick from me needed.
Wow, that is inspirational, just hearing you talk about it.
Yeah, it was. He is a huge inspiration. And I think that's what the word that comes out a lot when you see these chaps playing is you feel very humble, and it's just intriguing to see how you can see the difference from early on, when sometimes, as you know, these guys have had a very rough time, both physically and sometimes mentally, and golf is the only game that I know of that if you are disabled, you can play on level playing field with able bodied. And the confidence and self-esteem you get from that through this great game of golf is brilliant.
Well, we're so pleased to be joined by John Simpson, the founder of the Simpson Cup. And John, as Bob referenced, what you've done for the disabled and who have been injured in the line of duty is terrific. So many questions to ask, but before we go further with how the event works and how things have developed through the years with the On Course Foundation, John, how about a little bit of background on your personal and professional life that really helped pave the way for the Simpson Cup, for the On Course Foundation? I believe, if I'm correct, I believe both of your parents were in the military, and perhaps then some how your life evolved to get to this point.
Sure. Yeah, that's very true. My father was a fighter pilot in the Second World War, Spitfires and Hurricanes, and he got the DSC, which is quite something, and lived all the way through it, which is also quite something. And my mother was a dental nurse in the Air Force as well. And at the age of two, basically, I fell over on my second birthday, I think it was, and needed some stitches in my chin, and took me into the hospital to get stitches. And there was a polio epidemic in that particular hospital. And as you know, in the 50s, polio was an awful disease. Well, for many years, but many people died in the 50s of it. And I was very lucky that it just left me with a weak left leg, which when I got to 13, I spent about a year in hospital where they did lots of operations. putting me in good stead for the rest of my life, as it were.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky, and I mean that. I've been very lucky all the way along. But a doctor friend of my father's, and my father said, there's one game that you could play, and you know, I was really struggling walking at this point, is golf. And so I started playing and got down to 7 handicap. And then I actually heard about Mark McCormack and his company, IMG, and what an amazing job they were doing managing the big three in America, you know, Arnold Palmer, Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus, and how the company was growing. And I wrote to Mark, knowing that I was very keen on golf and sport, and asked him if there's any chance of... actually, I was a bit naughtier than that. I actually said I didn't think he'd gone much longer at IMG without me joining. Which, he must have got the... He must have thought, who is this idiot? I've got to meet him, you know.
Sure, exactly. you got his attention, right?
Yes, I did. So the rest is history. I was 20 years at IMG, and I managed some great names while I was there, including Nick Faldo and Bernard Langer and Greg Norman for a while, and Nicky Price and BJ Singh. We had a wonderful time, actually. And we were rewriting a lot of the rules of professional sport because, you know, Mark was really, and IMG was the real initiator for making, I think, where a lot of where sport is today. It was great fun making it up as we went along.
Oh, his influence, there's no question. Mr. McCormack's influence continues far and wide today. And then ultimately, you were inspired to start the OnCourse Foundation. John, explain what that is as a major fundraiser, and then from the OnCourse Foundation, how the Simpson Cup came to be.
Sure. Well, how it all happened, I was playing golf one day, and it was 2009. And I had a good day that I played quite well. And the chap I was playing with, or one of the guys, said, would I have come along and speak to his people? And I really wasn't too sure what he did. But in fact, this chap worked at the Headley Court, which is the British Military Rehabilitation Center. So I went there and spoke. And when I saw what I saw, which still has huge memories in my head right now, and the amount of horrific injuries I saw, and the amount of young people that were in there, I just thought, being disabled myself and knowing what golf had done for me, I was in a great position to start a charity, which would eventually become, within a year, the OnCourse Foundation. And very simply, what we do is we teach golf on a long-term basis. We teach the etiquette and the rules and the history. Because the idea eventually, once they get their confidence and self-esteem back, for those who want it, is to get them jobs in the golf and related industries. And we've had some huge successes for that. And then in 2012, we started the charity, separate charity, with different trustees and directors in America. And the Simpson Cup really was started primarily as a fundraiser for the OnCourse Foundation. And to raise awareness for the OnCourse Foundation, and of course, give the guys and the girls something to aim at to represent their countries again. And it's been a huge success, and competition is extremely professional on the course, but the camaraderie between the two teams is amazing. And as one of the American chaps told me, you know, we fought together. It's always the Brits and the Americans seem to be doing it. Along with the Canadians and Australians and things. But, you know, always it's the Brits and the Americans. We fight together, we get injured together, and sometimes we die together. And now we have this job of getting back together and seeing each other because they never get a chance of seeing each other again. So the camaraderie and fun is quite extraordinary.
John Simpson is our special guest. And, John, I'm so impressed with what you're doing with the OnCourse Foundation and the Simpson Cup. Could you please tell our listeners how they can offer their support?
Sure. Well, there's two things. One, if they do know of anybody, any relation or anybody they know who's an injured American serviceman who could be interested in joining us and we could teach them golf and hopefully jobs again, then the best thing to do is look at the website, which is the OnCourseFoundationUSA.org. And that is number one. Number two is, you know, we have to raise funds to make this all happen. And if anybody has a member of a golf course or somebody would like to do some fundraising for us, and that's mainly where we raise our money, where a golf course will have a day for the On Course Foundation. Our guys will go along, and, you know, we have 22 teams. We sell the teams, and that's how we make a lot of money to keep the charity all going. And we're growing it in America. You know? It never ceases to amaze me, you know. Britain, as you know, could fit into Florida quite easily. The size of America, and we're currently trying to raise more money because we're on the East Coast. We're moving into Texas next, and we started in California. So, you know, when you think there's just under 4 million injured servicemen in America, you know, it's a huge task. And I just think that people should know the success rate we have is quite amazing, and I mean that honestly. It's quite extraordinary what golf is doing and what On Course is doing for these guys and girls.
John, you mentioned something earlier in regards to your disability, and I've got to imagine that for those who you then came in touch with, it made the fact that you were disabled, it made you much more relatable, I would imagine, to those who ultimately have benefited from the On Course Foundation. It was actually a help in a way. It had to be, right?
You're absolutely right, and I think that you know, with great respect, but I think if you or Bob had said to one of these guys, "Come on, you can play golf," and they would look at you and say, they wouldn't say it, but they would look at you and say, "Hold on, you've got two good legs and two good arms. I haven't got any legs, or I haven't got an arm. How would you?" They would think that, but when I say it to them and they see that I am disabled, you're quite rightly, it's almost an acceptance and almost the point, hey, this is interesting. This chap's not done too badly with the game. Maybe it's something we can try. And again, the sort of initiation into golf, we do a few days where we go to the rehab centers in America and get some of these guys and girls to come along to get them going. And some of them, and over here, sometimes they're ordered now to attend because we've had such great successes. And you can see them turn up thinking, oh my God, golf course, what's that all about? You know, blah, 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 blah. And they're not golfers. 85% of our members have never played golf before their injuries. And then we get, we did one the other day with a Royal Marine here called Ian Bishop, who has both legs amputated above the knee and plays off 7 handicaps. And he just goes out there, and the pro says, just watch this. And there's a sort of amazement as he hits it right down the middle over 200 yards. And it's with really good coaching, and the coaches we use really understand all the different injuries that we've dealt with over the years. And I think without exception, the new guys hit the wow shot within the first morning session. And, you know, all your listeners and you guys know for sure what that means. We've got them. The game's
well,
you really
do have them. You're right, and that's an amazing statistic, John, in regards to those who had never even played the game, and then, you know, come out and experience that wow moment. I will tell you that, you know, a few weeks ago we had on Musings on Sports my good friend Dennis Walters, who I know you know, Dennis has overcome becoming a paraplegic at age 24. Put on more than 3,000 golf trick shows. He's now a member of the World Golf Hall of Fame. And Dennis played recently in the inaugural U.S. Adaptive Open at Pinehurst. And he won his flight, and he was delighted. But he was somewhat emotional in talking to me, and he said he was really blown away, more so than the individual accomplishment, by the spirit, the will of the other 95 contestants in that event. I would imagine the same holds true, that passion for wanting to play well, but also for what it means way beyond the golf course in terms of both the Simpson Cup and particularly what you're doing with the On Course Foundation.
Well, I know, and I must say, Dennis is an amazing individual, and full credit to him. He's fantastic. But I suppose you put it all in context. The thing that I find yeah, I still find it difficult to come to terms with when often the guys and girls will come up to you at a quiet time and genuinely say, you know, the Encores Foundation has saved our lives. When someone looks you in the eye like that and you know that they mean it by looking at them, it's quite something, and it makes me just want to just, you know, really get cracking and bring this whole thing out right across all America, because as we all know, the amount of suicides within the American injured servicemen is ridiculously high. We can all do to save some of them. Literally, this game will do that. The more the merrier.
Hey, John, did I hear it right that one of the participants in the Simpson Cup actually plays on the Corn Ferry Tour?
Oh, you're absolutely right. His name is Chad Pfeiffer. And interestingly enough, we have a Brit, because he's American, and he's qualified this year for the Simpson Cup. And in 2014, we had a new guy come to us who, at that point, this is a Brit, had still got his leg, but it looked like it was going to have to be amputated. And he had it amputated 2014, and so both he and Chad have both got the same injury, left leg, high up amputation. Mike Brown turned professional 4 years after that. And last 2 weeks ago, he won the Irish Open. He won the tournament there, the G4D, the tournament for the disabled that the European Tour putting on. He won it by 4 shots. And he won in Australia earlier this year. And he's also got a course record in Britain as well, playing in a professional tournament.
Well, speaking of course records, you probably hold them all as far as inspiring people to achieve things that they probably thought maybe they never could do again. And golf is the perfect conduit to those realization of dreams. John Simpson, on behalf of Kelly Elbin, I thank you so much for doing this and continued success with the foundation. And I hope some of our listeners will make a contribution just to further the wonderful cause that you're involved in. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Bob. And thank you, Kelly, for having me. Thank you so much. And I look forward to meeting up with you in the not too distant future.
Thanks, John. And again, one more reminder of where people can go to support what you're doing with the OnCourse Foundation, John.
Yeah, it's OnCourseFoundationUSA.org.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver, more control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with reactive IQ cover, the smarter tour ball.
You know, Bob, from the likes of Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney with Patriot Golf Days and Folds of Honor to what we just heard from John Simpson, it's really been our distinct pleasure to feature guests who, yes, they're known for being in the sports world, if you will, but who are giving back so much more through the game of golf.
Yeah, and golf provides that wonderful venue for that type of stuff. I mean, John Simpson has to be congratulated. He's making so many deserved military men feel, you know, good about themselves. They're competing. They want to practice. They want to be alive. And of course, we could spend hours talking about Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney and all that he's accomplished. And he's far from finished. I mean, he's the only F-16 fighter pilot and Class A PGA professional in existence. I mean, you know, you combine those two things, you got somebody very special, and that certainly is Colonel Dan Rooney.
Well, we also thank Lieutenant Colonel Dan from a couple weeks ago, and we certainly thank John Simpson, who you heard from today. Next week, Bob and I will welcome in Mark Rolfing of NBC Sports, who gosh, Bob, coming up on 35 years of walking the professional golf courses of the world, but along with his wife, Debbie, through the incredible foster care network that that they established in Hawaii. It's a beautiful story. They fostered 33 children, many, many of whom from birth until they've been able to find parents. It's a great story. You'll love hearing from Mark and his stories. There's particularly a story that he has with regards to Lee Trevino and Vin Scully that is a can't miss. A reminder, of course, to hear Musings on Sports when you click on morningread.com or wherever you may enjoy your podcast. Hope you all will check out my Monday Musings, which is my weekly Facebook blog. That's Kelly Elbin on Facebook. For my good friend Bob Bupka, it's been a pleasure talking with John Simpson. Thanks for joining us on Musings on Sports.